this means that Donald Trump will be the 45th president of the United States.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hello, and welcome to this week's 45th podcast. I'm here this week with Waj. Hey, Waj.
Hey, how's it going? We have a lot of fun Corey Lewandowski news today.
I don't know if we can call it fun news, but there is a lot of Lewandowski news. That is true.
Womp womp.
Yeah, it's he's like the most unfun guy in the White House. I may be overstating that, but I'm trying to think of anyone who's less fun other than even Mattis seems a little bit more fun than him.
I mean, Lewandowski is the type of fun, like when you're a teenager and your friend is really drunk and they say, hey, why don't we drive this car 120 miles per hour on a crowded highway? And you're like, that sounds like a bad idea. But Lewandowski is that type of guy who would probably do that. He's like, yeah, man, let's do it. Let's play chicken. Let's play chicken with a truck. And you're
he only
driving
feels alive when he's like about to die.
Yeah. Or when he's trying to kill someone else or assault someone else. Yeah, he's one
anyway,
of those.
I would rather party with Mattis, true statement, than party with Lewandowski.
I would much rather kick back seltzers with Mattis.
I'd rather party with, like, Bannon. And, you know, that's probably more dangerous than partying with Lewandowski. But it'd be fun.
Bannon at least is more well-read.
It's so at least more fun. Yeah, yeah. I would at least, like, have entertainment during parts of that conversation.
Bannon could back up his white nationalism, at least with like some cogent, like, intelligence. With Lewandowski,
I'm scared of the bathtub and the acid and where that came from. But, you know, I could ask him about it and maybe I'd get an answer. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but Bannon's the type of guy who would actually tell you in advance. Like, he'd be that type of serial killer who would explain to you. He would like monologue before killing you. I feel like Lewandowski would just like punch you in the face and throw you in the vat of like acid. That just might take.
Yeah, I don't think Lewandowski could have managed to get the acid on his own, but everything else holds up. Anyway, in terms of party rankings aside, Lewandowski is testifying today, sort of. I don't know if testifying is the right word for it.
Not the right word.
However, because of the timing, the whole hearing is still going on as we speak. So we'll not be able to update y'all on the ending of it. Although I feel like there's not going to be any surprises there based on what we've seen so far. To start this episode, however, I want to read a quote that I saw from, I was going on Twitter earlier, from an article from, I think, Jonathan Chait, and it's from our good friend Mulvaney, who also would probably be more fun to party with than Lewandowski, and that is a very low bar. Anyway, Mulvaney is the current, what is all his titles? He's chief of staff, he's...
The third chief of staff.
Acting chief of staff. He's, according to Trump, his budget director. He's the go-to guy for, like, lackeyism. But a few years ago, here's a quote from Mulvaney himself. He said, when he was still in Congress, "We've been fighting against an imperial presidency for 5.5 years. Every time we go to the floor and push back against an overreaching president, we get accused of being partisan at best and racist at worst. When we do it against a Republican president, maybe people will see that it was a principled objection in the first place. So we actually welcome that opportunity. It might actually be fun being a strict constitutionalist congressman doing battle with a non-strict constitutionalist Republican president."
And yeah. Now we know that Mick Mulvaney asked Wilbur Ross to direct NOAA officials to corroborate Trump's BS nonsense lie about Sharpiegate. Like, so that's where we come in 3 years.
I know it doesn't matter, but I do just want to know, for my own sake, did Mulvaney mean this when he said it? Did he know he was, like, was it just, like, posturing? Did he believe that he was a principled human being and has now discovered he's not one? I mean, not that he'd recognize it, but I don't, what is the psychology behind this?
I think he did mean it when he said it. I think Graham meant his criticisms.
No, Graham didn't mean it. Graham's never meant a thing in his life.
No, okay,
I will stand by that.
I was going to go to Cruz, but let's say Sass, right? Sass and the Mulvaneys and the people who criticized Trump in 2015, 2016, I think they stood behind it. However, the real troubling trend and something I think a theme that will come up throughout this conversation is how many Republicans have abdicated their own ethics, their morals, their values, their own statements, their own critiques, just to cozy up to power. And I do feel what we've seen, especially with this Lewandowski hearing, right? And we're going to get into detail about this, is if given a choice between democracy or their ideology, I think we have to make peace with the fact that the modern Republican Party is going to give up democracy. And if they feel like they can't advance their principles or the idea or their ideology through the democratic process, they're going to subvert it. And that's something that I don't think we've really kind of talked about as much as a country as we should have. Like, they're going to give it all up. And that example that you just gave with Mulvaney and his quote, like compared to his actions as acting chief of staff in 2019, is the proof. They'll give it all up. They'll give all of it up.
But are they? I mean, there's a range of responses from the Republicans. I think most of them are fully aware of what they're doing. Like the Cruises of the world, the especially the Grahams of the world. Most of them, I mean, I think Cruz is the archetype of this. I mean, he knows what Trump is. Trump was nasty to him. Like, Trump said he doesn't like Trump. I do not think Cruz actually has fond feelings towards him. But he is more than willing to put that aside for the Republican greater good.
I just want to remind people, Trump mocked the dude's wife and mother, and now he's still a boot heel for Trump. That's how low Ted Cruz is. He has no spine. He's like an amoeba, and no offense to amoebas.
But I think he's like a self-aware. He never would express the self-awareness, but he knows what he's doing. Graham has just never cared one way or another about principles, so he's happy to go wherever the power's going to be. But people like Mulvaney are the ones that I, one, don't get, and two, wonder how many of them there really are. To me, it seems like Mulvaney is, you know, I think from what we see of him in the White House now, I think he knows, or I think he believes that he is still on the side of democracy, that he's still on the side of right. He is telling a lie to himself where he believes what he's doing now is, in fact, the principled, strict constitutionalist position. Well, I don't know, that's cheating. You know what? I taught myself out of that already. There's no way Mulvaney thinks he's being a strict constitutionalist for what he's doing in the White House.
But I do think it goes back to our point. I think the allegiance is less to democracy and more to the ideology and to the values. And so
as much as I agree about Republicans, I think that there's some disturbing signs, too, like this week from North Carolina Democrats. I don't know if you're following that at all.
No, tell me. Which one? There's a lot of news.
Yeah, so the North Carolina gerrymandering fight is still going on, and there's been a new proposal from the GOP in North Carolina for how to divide up the districts there. And previous versions of their gerrymandering have gotten struck down because they're like basically just straight up racist and right. Extremely disproportionate. The newer versions are not quite so egregious, but they are still extremely Republican favoring. And yet, they managed to get quite a bit of Democratic support by giving certain key Democratic representatives in North Carolina uncompetitive districts. And because of that, those Democrats went along, even though the overall tilt of it is extremely pro-Republican, because it supports them individually, they also signed off.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. Selfish political power. I think Republicans is a bit different in the sense that there exists a right-wing infrastructure, which is much more organized and tight than, say, the Democratic infrastructure, right? And this is moved a lot by conservative ideology. And what people kind of sometimes forget, it's not just politics for these people, right? They go to church together. They go to the same, like, their kids go to the same summer camps. And so think about any tribe. Well, like, what's death if you were, like, say, you know, in a tribe back in the day? Exile. And so that's why a lot of these people are also going along with it, because I'll give you an example.
Like, look at their asses primaried if they don't.
Well, number one, but also a lot of the people who enable Trump, who go on live television and support him. I know some of these people, I won't name names, but they hate Trump and they hate everything he represents. So then the question goes, well, why do you go on TV and support him? And like, it's basically like, well, if I go against him, I lose everything. I lose my social circle. I lose my future bread and butter. I lose the political infrastructure. So for some people, it's purely selfish. For some people, however, I do believe that they're like, Trump is our blunt instrument and we will ride him for the ideology. I actually kind of think that's what Barr is doing. I think Barr is kind of a true believer. And he says, really? Through Trump, I'll get what I want.
He's a true believer in what he wants. I don't think Barr's a true believer in the sense that he truly believes that Trump is like the Republican Jesus.
No. He's a true believer in the ideology and the end goal.
But Barr, I think I would bet money knows how stupid Trump is.
Of course, they all do. But even the evangelical Christians, they know Trump is corrupt. But what do they keep saying? Trump is our Cyrus, our flawed Persian king who God has put here as an instrument to achieve his will. And so they go along with it. That's all I'm saying. I think it runs deeper through the ideology than it does for Democrats. Like, yeah, there's a cravenness. And there's a cynicism, like the example you gave in North Carolina. That's a given. That's bipartisan. But I think people kind of underestimate the deep ideological tribal affiliation of so many Republicans. Like, it even explains Kavanaugh. The ends justifies the means. And democracy is something that we will give up for the ends. And I think Mulvaney in that regards is like, okay, I'll get ahead politically, but I'll also advance my ideological cause. All right, so I'm trying to lose weight forever. I work out just to stay 10 pounds overweight and maintain dad bod.
But that's your goal.
This is my goal. But, you know,
I saw your tweets last night about making the choice about a minute snack, yeah, just going for the lamb and rice in the fridge.
But that's what I'm saying. I always fail, and I'm always looking for a program that can help me with my perpetual quest to lose weight.
Well, that's where Noom comes in, because getting in shape is not just about losing weight. It's about learning healthier habits and feeling better about yourself. Whether that's having more stamina to keep up with your busy life, or finally getting to those goal genes, or just being more in tune with your body's needs, or practicing more self-care.
It's not a diet. It's actually a healthy and easy to stick to way of life online program. It's based on research. It actually works. They've actually invested a lot of data into this, and for people like me who are always trying to lose their dad bod, this is ideal.
Noom is a habit-changing solution, and it helps users learn to develop a new relationship with food through personalized courses. It's based in psychology, and Noom teaches you why you do the things you do, and arms you with the tools that you need to break the bad habits and replace them with better ones.
All right, so it's time to start. Small steps lead to big progress. Sign up for your trial with Noom today. Go to noom.com/45th. That's noom.com/45th.
What do you have to lose? Visit noom.com/45th to start your trial today. That's noom.com/45th, the last weight loss program you'll ever need. Well, that is strict constitutionalists that the Republicans are now supporting is a division of power that's more like a removal of power from the legislative branch. Right. Because this week we were supposed to have three people testify in the House as part of Congress's, what are we calling it? Pre-impeachment inquiry, impeachment like foray. I mean, the Republicans were criticizing this today, and you know what? They're right. The fact that Democrats can't figure out what they're doing here. Yeah, that is a problem.
It's an utter incoherence. You have Pelosi not wanting to talk about it. Then you got Nadler saying it's an impeachment inquiry. Then you got Swalwell saying they're going to impeach. Then you got alleged quote-unquote centrist Democrats who are saying don't talk about it. It's like the Democrats are always afraid of their own shadow, and Republicans are afraid of the shadow because it's black. But it's like literally, it's like these nerds who bring a fork to a gunfight. I mean, honestly, if this was Republicans, I've said this before, I'll say it again.
Oh, they know it too. Republicans would totally admit that. Like, no one doubts that this would be going on if the shoes were reversed.
No. Yeah, of course. But in March, after getting the Mueller report, which is a smoking gun, there literally would be a vote in the House for impeachment. They would have impeached Trump. But now we're literally playing this stupid word salad game. And this is like literally what's happening right now.
We're just going to call it impeachment curious. That's the current state of the House Democrats. So in this state of, you know, putting the toe in the water of impeachment, doing whatever they're doing, this nameless proceeding they're going under, they called three people to testify this week. Lewandowski, Dearborn, and Porter. Now, Lewandowski was a campaign manager for a hot minute, just like all of his campaign managers. But he was never in the White House, never employed after that. Instead, he was getting rich as a lobbyist and, you know.
He was being the swamp as a lobbyist.
He was being the swamp. And Dearborn and Porter were, Dearborn was part of the administration. But also, he was a significant player in the campaign itself. And Porter, of course, was the White House aide who got fired last year under the second chief of staff. Anyway. There's only one of them testifying this week because Dearborn and Porter are no-shows. Now, what happened is that the White House instructed both of them to not appear at the hearing today because Rick Dearborn and Rob Porter are, quote, absolutely immune from testifying. Now, what is this immunity? No one knows. Dearborn and Porter are defying it based on, quote, constitutional immunity. What does that mean? No one knows. So, for Porter's part, he's taking a slightly less aggressive tone on his own behalf, you know, a little bit CYA. His attorney wrote a letter that said that his client was trapped between, quote, competing and incompatible demands from coordinate and co-equal branches. And as a result, he would now not comply with the subpoena. He's not saying that he's, like, defying it. He's saying, you know what? This is not my responsibility to make this fight happen. I'm going to let the three of y'all, the, you know, legislative, the executive, and the judicial branch work it out. And call me when you're done. And I'll do whatever I'm told to do. So, end result, they ain't appearing. They ain't testifying for unclear reasons. Now, Lewandowski, I was going to say he is testifying today right now, but testifying is really overstating the situation. Now, before the hearing, what the White House attorney stated is that Lewandowski's conversations with Trump are, quote, protected from disclosure by long-settled principles protecting executive branch confidentiality interest. So, yeah, basically, we have Lewandowski today on the Hill testifying, sort of, but his testimony is limited to repeating what is in the Mueller report.
Right.
Now, have you watched any of it?
But I have, but, you know, he came to stall. He came to mock them. You know, Republicans are seeing this as a victory. They're hooting. If you kind of step back, it's kind of shocking that they're kind of hooting and hollering and supporting, like, essentially the White House stymieing what are legitimate efforts in an inquiry and, like, basically supporting, like, you know, the stonewalling of subpoenas and the fact.
Of course they celebrate. They're winning. I mean, this is a farce and they're getting away with it. Like, they have totally won the day here because House Democrats, they knew who Lewandowski is. They knew what he's going to do. Like, this is not a surprise to anyone. And they called him. They should have been prepared to back it up or don't call him at all because.
What's the next step? You know, you have to look. The reason if I was a Republican, I would just laugh is, like I said before, I'm looking at a nerd who's brought a fork to a gunfight. I'm going to slap you around and I'm going to get away with it because you're not going to do anything.
Well,
and
now they know they can get away with it. Like, if there was any doubt, and there would have been some, there is none that this technique works. Lewandowski is proving it right now as we speak.
Yeah. But also there's one positive. The one positive essentially is he admitted that part of the Mueller report that said that Trump basically asked Lewandowski to tell Sessions to limit the special counsel's investigation. They got that one win. Now, if your Democrats were smart and they're not, and if they were good with messaging and they're not, you would just play the, like, you would take that clip and you would make a message out of it. And all the Democrats would be on the cable news today saying, as proven in the Mueller report, Lewandowski was asked by Donald Trump, and he was actually asked to take it in notes, right? Because Lewandowski actually, like, one of the few times that Trump actually asked him to, like, write it down, literally write down the fact that he wanted the limitation of the special counsel's investigation. Boom.
But he never really conceded anything. Like, the one part of the hearing that was at least genuinely entertaining was when he finally did get trapped at, like, in a point, and he was asked, like, okay, so you were told by Trump to deliver this message, but you never did. You chickened out. So why didn't you deliver it? And his answer was, because he went on vacation.
That was great. That was a great response.
He total deadpan. He like did not flinch in telling this ridiculous lie that everyone in that room knows the ridiculous lie. And he's committing to it.
Yeah. And because, like we said, like, what he knows, they're not going to do anything. And wouldn't you? Like, if suppose they get Porter. Porter will do the same thing. Like, all of them will do the same thing.
They'll just Porter. Porter can't even go into the room. They're like, Lewandowski is not an employee, so they got him in there. I mean, like, here's the question. Why is Lewandowski getting away with this? In this case, because there's just no consequences. But, like, there isn't actually any valid basis or legal precedent or anything for what he's doing. He's not even claiming executive privilege here. At one point, finally, like way late in the hearing, this issue came up with Representative Raskin. And here's how that exchange went.
Will you accept this view of the so-called confidentiality interest executive privilege, which you have been invoking today, on behalf of the president's ability to prevent Congress from collecting testimony from private citizens? Will you accept that in your service if you are elected to the Senate?
You know, Congressman, I appreciate your confidence in my ability to win in New Hampshire, and I'm sure many people in New Hampshire have that same confidence in me.
Well, that I was being just said, going on your representation to the answer.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you. But that being said, it's not my privilege to waive, Congressman. It's the executive office's privilege. And I'm not an attorney,
So let me ask you a question. Are you representing the White House has told you that they are invoking the executive privilege on your behalf today?
I don't believe it's an executive privilege, sir. And again, I think we've submitted the letter for your clarification of what the White House has said.
Well, let me ask.
It's not my privilege to waive.
Well, I don't think it's anyone's privilege to waive because I don't think it exists, Mr. Lewandowski. I think the whole thing is imaginary. It's like the tooth fairy. You didn't work for the president in the White House.
My children are watching. Thank you, Congressman.
I'm sorry.
My children were watching, so thank you for that.
Well, I hope the president's not on then.
Yeah, so Lewandowski agrees here. This is not executive privilege he's invoking. It's this completely new and never before heard of privilege. In fact, it's so new that it doesn't even have a name. It's just the privilege that Trump has to never have anything he says ever revealed, ever.
Yeah, and it's interesting that the White House is invoking this unicorn privilege over an individual who never served in the White House.
Yeah.
Corey Lewandowski.
It's not like a White House agency privilege. It's not a executive branch privilege. It's not a operation of the government privilege. It is purely like things Trump says privilege. Now, if you are a white collar criminal, like this is a pretty sweet spot to be in, because basically all white collar crimes and the proof of them is going to come in the form of private conversations that you have. And Trump has now created a situation where nothing he says can be. Everything he says is immune to the rule of law if he says it in private, because he's invented a privilege that they cannot name and cannot explain and cannot justify other than by saying like constitutional concerns. And because of it, yeah, nothing he's ever said to anyone that he doesn't want to be repeated can be repeated.
Yeah, but that's what happens when you're in power. See, the Republicans are always really good. They know how to use and abuse power to the hilt. And going back to our previous conversation where it comes to like the weakness of Democrats, and I had some Democrats actually like, you know, complain to me earlier today on Twitter. They're like, hey, you know, it is actually an impeachment inquiry. Listen, there's a lot of centrist Democrats or Republican like, you know, districts, and they're looking for re-election. And, you know, come on, it's a tough situation. And I'm like, no, it's incoherent leadership. Like literally you have Pelosi saying one thing, you have Nadler saying something else. And that incoherence is reflected in the hearing itself, because now it's like, all right, Lewandowski literally flicks you off, kicks you in the face and says, what are you going to do? And what's the answer? What are they going to do?
They're going to keep playing impeachment footsie.
That's it. Exactly. Look, everyone says it's too harsh. You have to blame the Republicans. We know how the Republicans are. It goes back to the start of this conversation. They're in full service of Trump. We don't know their intentions, but they're in full service of Trump. They're going to give up Democratic institutions. They're going to give up their own ethics, their own values, their own morality, the Constitution. They'll give up everything for Trump. We know this. The question I have is, what will Democrats do? And I think that's a valid question, because we keep asking, right?
They're going to keep relying on institutions.
Yeah. How low will you go, Republican? This is like a valid question we've asked for 3 years. How low will Trump have to go before Republicans care? And we realize there's no bottom. So the question I have for Democrats is...
So that's not entirely fair. They do care. They have cared. And they have pushed back to a certain degree. The problem is they have gotten away with it this far. They have now... I think if we are going to redo the whole impeachment thing... Or sorry, if we're going to redo the whole Mueller report, the first time around, we saw resistance. The whole point of the Lewandowski hearing is that everyone else in the White House wouldn't do the shit Trump asked them for. That's why he turned to Lewandowski, because no one else around him was willing to break the norms that he was asking them to break. That was why he was forced to turn to this dude. He hasn't talked like outside of the White House, his loyal foot soldier who would do the shit that no one else would touch. I think if we had to replay it now, they would touch it. But the first time around, yeah, they were still there were norms they wanted to enforce and boundaries they wouldn't cross. It's just because there's never been any pushback and they've gotten away with it so long, you can see the steady erosion of those boundaries and norms that they're willing to enforce.
And also, you know, this is why, you know, people say to me, oh, why are you so much for impeachment? You know that the Republicans are in the Senate. You know that they're never going to remove him. I say that the enforcement is important. Democracy still matters. The law still matters. And impeachment is a process enshrined in the Constitution by the framers for a moment like this. Because look at the signal. And we've talked about this often on the show. You know, what's going to happen in the future? The erosion of these checks and balances, these safeguards. Because if Trump can get away with it, goes back to your point in North Carolina. Why won't a Democratic president get away with it?
Because
I mean, if you're a Democratic president, you'd be like, F this.
They're both cowards, so, you know, they might not come up.
But I'm for democracy, people for accountability, which is why you need to impeach, just to send a signal. And I still say strategically, by playing with the big guns that the Democrats have in the House, but they refuse to load the weapons because they're Democrats, it will still weaken Trump. We're a year out before the election. It's a game of chipping away. It's death by a thousand cuts. So you need to do more and more of these hearings. But in these hearings, you need to be unified. And
unified. They're just not always effective.
Well, they're not unified in messaging. Like you said, we're playing impeachment footsie. Is today's hearing with Corey Lewandowski and officially like an impeachment inquiry? get that word away from me, that dirty word impeachment. And then now that it was like, it is an impeachment inquiry. Like, imagine if you're American, you're like, what the F's happening?
Yeah.
It's, they're going to get, keep getting away with it until Democrats get a spine and realize they have to stop being hijacked by this mythical Rust Belt voter. And the centrist Democrats need a spine and you need some leadership. I don't know, man. Maybe it's the Democratic candidates themselves who need to like weigh in.
On the other hand, we could just let the Republicans go ahead and do messaging for them because Ratcliffe today, Representative Ratcliffe, Trump's hoped for DNI guy that was shelved because he's hideously underqualified for the job. He's still standing for Trump. And today he was trying so hard. I think he said it probably 20 times in his questioning of Lewinowski to press the message of the party of impeachment. Democrats are the party of impeachment. And I'm like, that's not going to work the way you want to. But also the Democrats do not deserve that title because they are sure as hell not the party of impeachment. But you know what? If you want to go ahead and brand them that, I'm all in favor of it. Maybe it'll kick them into gear.
Yeah, why not? Why not?
Waj, you have not been around yet for Robbie and I's chats about deodorant, have you?
I have not been around, and there's probably a reason, and I'm slightly offended.
Well, now you're invited to the deodorant party, because there is a great new deodorant that is gender neutral and amazing. It's called Native.
And apparently, Native has 8,000 five-star reviews from customers.
And one of those is not for me, because I'm too lazy to do that, but I would get 5 stars if I had gone ahead and done a review, because Native works.
Listen, I actually use deodorant. And if I can use deodorant, which is natural, which doesn't have all this whackness, which provides moisture, which absorbs, let's say, a lot of wetness. I think that's a politically correct term that I can make sure is not tested on animals. And the company allows free shipping and returns. I'm going to go with that company. And guess who does it? Native.
Yeah, this shit works and smells good. What more do you need? So if you want to try the best deodorant around and want 20% off your first purchase, go to nativedeodorant.com and use promo code 45th during checkout. That's 20% off your first purchase by visiting nativedeodorant.com and using promo code 45th.
Go Native.
Well, impeachment aside, and aside from the fact that the hearing today with Lewandowski seems misguided on several levels, Lewandowski still matters. There are real substantive concerns with what not concerns. There's real substantive problems with what Lewandowski did and what his role was. And Representative Lew is probably the most succinct in his questioning at laying out the stakes and why, despite all the hand-waving, all the distractions, Lewandowski's role in the sessions in the obstruction issue was a big deal.
Now, earlier in your testimony, you had made a pretty stunning concession, which is that you had not read the Mueller report. That explains a lot about your testimony, and I'm thinking maybe you don't know what the special counsel actually found. So I'm going to tell you. Volume 1 of the Mueller report found that the Russians attacked American elections in a sweeping and systematic manner. It also found that the Trump campaign knew about the attack, that they gave internal polling data to the Russians, that they planned their campaign strategy around this attack. It's not just in the Mueller report, it's also in Robert Mueller's testimony under oath in front of the Intel Committee, as well as this committee. The reason we're here today is because Volume 2 finds that the president tried to obstruct that investigation into the Russian attack on at least 10 instances, 5 of which Robert Mueller found there was substantial evidence. So I'm gonna put up a slide about what the special counsel found about this particular incident in which you're involved. He found substantial evidence that the president's effort to have sessions limit the scope of the special counsel's investigation to future election interference was intended to prevent further investigative scrutiny of the president's and his campaign's conduct. So that's why we're all here today. And I think it's important to look at the timeline to understand how this all unfolded. You previously testified that in March 2017, that you were aware that Attorney General Sessions recused himself. He did that in March 2017. I'm going to put up a slide about what the White House counsel's office had directed about communications with Sessions. It said that Sessions should not be contacted, no contact with Sessions, and no serious concerns about that instruction. A few months later, on June 14, 2017, the media reports that the Russian investigation turns into obstruction investigation into the president himself. And then when Donald Trump learns about this, he goes nuts. Isn't that correct?
I don't know that to be accurate.
The president launched over 10 tweets very shortly thereafter, calling the investigation a witch hunt. That's correct, isn't it?
I don't know that to be accurate.
did. All right, so then he calls Don McGahn at home and says that Mueller has to go. Call me back when you do it. Were you aware of that, that he called Don McGahn at home to tell him to fire Mueller?
No.
Okay. 2 days after that phone call, the president calls you, into his office. You admitted that he dictated a message for you to carry to Jeff Sessions. You said that you didn't give it to Jeff Sessions because you went on vacation. The Mueller report actually says that the Attorney General canceled that meeting. That's correct, isn't it? The Attorney General, in fact, canceled the meeting that you tried to give the note to?
Where is that reference in the report, Congressman?
Sure, it's on page 92. I'm going to give you the courtesy. I'm just going to read it for you. It says, Lewandowski called Sessions and arranged a meeting for the following evening at Lewandowski's office, but Sessions had to cancel due to a last-minute conflict. You do remember that?
I believe that's accurate.
Okay, all right. And then a little bit later on July 8th, the media writes additional negative information about the president and his campaign, including that his senior advisors and his son met with Russian operatives who had dirt on Hillary Clinton as part of Russia and its government's support for Mr. Trump. Donald Trump then calls you back into his office again, alone, for a meeting. And this time, he tells you that Sessions is going to be fired if he doesn't meet with you. Do you recall that conversation?
Yeah, I took that as a joke.
Okay, you took that as a joke. After that, the president goes on TV, and he says, Sessions should have never recused himself, and if he was going to recuse himself, he should have told me before he took the job, and I would have picked somebody else. Do you think the president was joking when he said that on TV?
I don't know if the president was joking or not.
When the president met with you alone to ask if you delivered the note to Sessions, do you believe any of that was a joke?
I can't discuss a private conversation with the president that isn't in the report, sir.
Yeah, the question still sort of mediocre, but he does clearly lay out the stakes of why what Trump did was obstruction, why it relates back to the Russian investigation, and why this isn't just a matter of, like, trying to play gotcha with the president. It's like we had real threats to our democracy. The Russians were trying to friendly election. Trump's campaign aided and abetted that. And that's what the obstruction was aimed at covering up.
That's right. That's right. And Lewandowski apparently has plans for the Senate, right? He wants to become the senator from New Hampshire. So there's one.
Oh, you mean this was not a stump speech for his campaign? Because it sure as hell sounded like it today.
I mean, if it was, but still, I do think it will hurt him, right? Like, at the end of the day, my prediction is that Trump will get worse. The people around him will get worse. He will get more desperate. He's more reckless, more self-destructive. We're more than a year out from the elections. So all this will chip away. It's all a game of, like, death by...
I will bet you $100 that in Lewandowski's campaign ads, he'll use clips from his, like, speeches today at the hearing.
I do. But I still think, look, it'll help him with the Republican base. That's for sure. I don't think it'll help him win because there's just not enough Republicans.
I mean, we'll see.
I will take your cynicism. I will take your cynicism, but I still think there's enough damage done to him if the Democrats were smart at messaging that they can also use the fact that he's a Trump loyalist and an obstructionist against him when he runs for senator for New Hampshire. That's what I'm saying.
Well, we know Democrats are not good at messaging because at the hearing today, they lost a big chance to demonstrate that Lewandowski and Trump are still lying about their contacts with the Russians during the campaign. Here is what Lewandowski said today, earlier on in the hearing.
And Mr. Lewandowski, had they contacted you, what would have been your response in terms of notifying others on the election in terms of their dealing with Russians?
We would have worked with them. I would have recommended working through counsel to work with them to notify them of any potential contacts, which I don't ever recall having. But if we would have had any, I would have made sure we notified the appropriate authorities immediately.
Thank you. I yield back.
And then later on with Representative Demings, he gave an even more concrete statement about his knowledge of the campaign's contact with Russia.
And out of being the campaign manager, being very close to the candidate, the campaign has over 100 contacts with Russia, and you didn't know anything about that.
That's correct.
Did you ever ask?
To the best of my knowledge.
Now, the thing is, even though this hearing is stuck to, like, the four corners of the Mueller report and can't go beyond it, the Mueller report itself shows how bullshit this whole thing is. And that Lewandowski is either, I mean, he's lying, but he's definitely saying false statements. Even though you can't prove he remembers the contacts, like, it is black and white confirmed Lewandowski had full knowledge of extensive contacts between various campaign officials and the Russians. For instance, let's go to the emails from June of 2016, where Papadopoulos replied to an email, replied to Lewandowski about a Russian visit and asked Lewandowski if, quote, he wanted to have a call about this topic and whether they were, quote, following up with it. And Lewandowski told Papadopoulos that he should connect with Clovis and their campaign advisor because he was running point in the issue and that they should explore further if Mr. Trump is interested in visiting Russia at some point. So not only did Lewandowski know about Russian contacts, he knew that there were serious discussions about Trump actually going to Russia to meet with high-level Russian officials.
Right. I mean, you can extract so much information from Lewandowski if you actually enforce the tools that are given to you legally to extract that information, right? And the question then, are they going to do it? Are they going to flex? And they should flex. That's why they were voted in the midterm elections.
And you'll never, ever convince me that Lewandowski did not know about Papadopoulos talking to the Russian, talking to Mifsud and finding out about the dirt that the Russians had on Hillary Clinton. I will never believe that I did not include that in their conversations with one another. We also know that in April of 2016, right, when Papadopoulos is in London and doing all this stuff, he is regularly emailing Corey Lewandowski and telling him that, quote, Papadopoulos had been receiving a lot of calls over the last month about Putin wanting to host Trump and the team when the time is right. And then on May 4th, 2016, Papadopoulos forwarded Lewandowski an email from Timofeev, the Russian MFA contact, the Russian State Department equivalent, in which he, again, raised the possibility of a meeting between Trump and Putin in Moscow. And Papadopoulos asked Lewandowski whether that was, quote, something we want to move forward with. All you got to do is quote the Mueller report, and you can open up this whole door that Lewandowski is lying about his lack of knowledge of the Russian contacts.
And not only just quote the report, I mean, again, think about messaging. This is why Trump is effective, because he's a reality TV star. A large part of this is optics and messaging.
Okay. But he was not responsible for that show working out.
And that's not Mueller gave you everything. It's your job to extract it. You get it on camera. You get a clip. Make that clip go viral. Play that shit on cable news. Do you see what I'm saying? You chip away, you chip away, you chip away. It's not on Mueller to explain the Mueller report to the American public. It's on the Democrats to explain in simple, effective terms why impeachment is the proper tool to hold this president accountable and why his minions like Lewandowski are shady as F. And like you said, use the report and their own actions and conducts to basically malign their character in public. And of course, the Democrats fail to do it.
Yeah. Anyway, let's take a quick break here and see if there's been any updates for the past half hour in the Lewandowski hearing. Let's go to the Twitter feed live. And
live.
It actually looks like much more of the same. Okay.
Let me see.
Well, that does not look like it was an exciting update. So, yeah, I think we didn't miss anything by starting our recording before it was over.
It's still not over. I mean, there's enough there, right? Like, that's what I'm saying. If the Democrats just flex a bit, you can really milk information of Lewandowski. Or you hold
It's not even that I'm so concerned. Like, Lewandowski's going to be used. Like, in terms of information, he's probably not the best guy to have it there because he's such he's like Cohen to the degree that he is a willing, happy enforcer. But the real damage is the precedent he's setting up there now by showing the White House that, yeah, you can get away with this shit. I mean, not that he's the first president. It's been going on for a while. But this is a very openly defiant position they're taking and having no consequences for it. And also this continual invocation of this, fake Trumpian privilege is insane. You know what? Let's move on. Lewandowski is Lewandowski, and there's probably nothing more useful going to happen there. I hope I'm wrong. There's, an hour more to go. Maybe we'll, have an update to this 45th, be like, actually, shit went wild. I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, I gave up. I gave up an hour ago. Let's move on to more depressing news. All right. So for those of you who are lucky enough to marry up like I did, my wife, Sarah, is a doctor and a professor. And as such, I always am inspired when she wears her scrubs. But believe it or not, no one really asks, hey, is there more that you can do with your scrubs? Is there a way not to make you look like a part of the bureaucratic uniform proletariat? And thankfully, we have Figs, which actually exists. It's an amazing company that, wait for it, is making scrubs stylish and functional for the people who deserve it the most, people like my wife, who help save our lives.
Yeah, medical professionals have a hard job, and I would never do it. I'd be terrible at it. But they do get the sweet option of wearing scrubs. And now there are fantastic scrubs from Figs that not only are comfy and convenient, and you don't have to think too hard, just pull them out and wear it. They're also super stylish. Like, they're scrubs that actually look pretty good. I have a pair. I'm a cheater. I shouldn't. I don't deserve them. I'm not medical. But also, they're really comfy and convenient. So if they work for me, they'll definitely work for medical professionals. And that's why Figs is where you should go for all your scrub needs.
It's also antimicrobial, because of course it is. Thank you, Dr. Nerds. So it protects from germs and bacteria. It's also insanely soft. It has a four-way stretch. They're made with yoga waistbands, so you can hulk it out if you want to, and like if you eat a little too much during Thanksgiving. It gives back, and you can too. So every time you shop at Figs, they give scrubs to healthcare providers in need around the world through their Threads for Threads initiative. And to date, Figs has donated hundreds of thousands of scrubs in over 35 countries.
And Figs make great gifts for the lifesavers in your life, and also for people who work at home and want to be lazy and slip around in scrubs. So for the doctors and the slackers in your life, get them Figs gift cards.
So whether you're one of the awesome humans like my wife who works in healthcare and saves your life, or you just want to say thanks to those who deserve it.
Or Figs, you're a schlub like me.
Or if you're a schlub like Susan, and we're all schlubs, Figs is going to make it easy to gift these deserving people. We're going to give you 15% off your first purchase by using the code 45th. That again, the code is 45th. Head to wearfigs.com, wearfigs.com, and enter the code 45th at the checkout. And you too can pretend to be a doctor like Susan.
Well, speaking of this new special Trumpian privilege, our new DNI, who is not Ratcliffe, thankfully, Joseph McGuire, is now facing questions over some kind of whistleblower issue that's going on in the intelligence community.
This is actually huge.
It's huge in some way. It's so unknown right now. I don't want to put too much of a sun on it, but the whole procedural part is extremely disturbing and a big deal. Because what we know right now is that on August 12th, some employee somewhere in the intelligence community's apparatus filed a whistleblower complaint about something that they wanted to blow the whistle on. We don't know what it was. So we have no clues at this point about the actual topic or subject or what sort of intelligence. We don't know anything about the content of it. We just know that someone did it. And we know that when they filed it with the IG, the Inspector General for the intelligence agencies, they did their statutorily mandated two-week review. And they determined that this complaint, whatever it was both, one, urgent, and two, credible.
What's the proper procedure, Susan? Tell them the proper procedure.
That is the proper procedure. You get 2 weeks to evaluate it. If it's credible and urgent, then you escalate it, which was done here. The IG is this is credible, this is urgent. We don't know how big in scope this, we don't know if it's I doubt it's some massive, agency-wide problem. It could be a very niche issue, very specific, targeted problem, not some kind of, we don't know what it is, basically. But it's a real problem.
All the criteria is meant to move it forward and to investigate it. And that's what's been done historically throughout Republican and Democratic administrations.
Yeah. Historically, since Nixon, because after Nixon, they're oh, God, we have to amend our whistleblower rules for the intelligence communities, or else we're never going to find out about all the shit that the executive's doing. Anyway, IG did its job. 2 weeks after that, they forwarded this whole complaint to the DNI. And at that point, the DNI has a week to review it. But the statute says that he must pass this on to the House Intelligence Committees. And this is not a if situation. This is not a if you want to situation. Like with Mnuchin and the tax returns that were requested, this is a shall situation. And that means by September 2nd, McGuire should have handed it over. He did not.
He did not hand it over. I wonder why. I wonder why he did not hand it over, Susan.
Because of this nameless, amazing Trumpian privilege.
Yes, this nameless, amazing Trumpian privilege. Also the fact that according to the latest reports, and who knows, there might be some more news, there was someone above him who I don't think has been named yet, who basically superseded this decision to move it forward, even though, as you have described, the process was completely kosher and halal and should have resulted in this complaint being heard.
Yeah.
So do you think it's related to Trump?
Well, here's what we know from Schiff. In his letters describing this problem and telling McGuire that he had a deadline of today, Tuesday, to hand the stuff over, or else on Thursday, 2 days from now, he'd be have his ass hauled into before the committees and testify about what's going on. He said that, quote, even though the disclosure was made by an individual within the intelligence community through lawful channels, you have improperly withheld that disclosure on the basis that, in your view, the complaint concerns conduct by someone outside of the intelligence community, and because the complaint involves confidential and potentially privileged communications. Yeah, there's that potentially privileged communications. Not definitely privileged, not a known privileged. This is someone invoking this unnamed, new, novel, amazing Trumpian privilege that they can't put a moniker on because there isn't one. Yeah, basically someone above his head, which is not that many people, has said, no, this is magically privileged somehow, and you can't release it. And that doesn't have to be Trump, but it's Trump. We all know it's Trump. It's definitely Trump.
It's Trump.
It's totally Trump. It's hard to imagine a scenario in which this would need to be done unless it was Trump. And also this magical privilege that they're invoking so far has been only used to protect conversations that Trump was aware of or ordered or involved in or personally does not want disclosed.
So what do you think? What do you think? I mean, of course, we have no idea. But what do you think this whistleblower might have?
I don't think we know yet. The one thing that makes me a little more curious is the timing. This came in like right before the last DNI Coates stepped down. There, it could suggest something was brewing and then Dan Coates noped out of there.
Right.
So that's maybe, but also there's a very real possibility here that this is some career civil servant intelligence person somewhere in one agency who takes their work very seriously and for a fairly niche issue has come across like an urgent and serious concern that to them and to us and to like the the federal system is urgent and is a big concern and deserves whistleblowing, but it's not the kind of thing that's going to be like, oh, this is a giant scandal. Who knows?
Well, let's not forget recently that Donald Trump on Twitter declassified surveillance footage of an Iranian facility.
Oh, what was the date of that? That was too recent, though. This would predate that. This was August 12th was when it was filed. Presumably, this was like brewing for a little while before that.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, just to give someone an example, that the fact that you mentioned the intelligence community, like imagine if you're a career servant who actually is a patriot and cares about our national security. Won't you be, I don't know, a bit unnerved by that?
And yeah, also but like being super pissed off that your whole work has been destroyed by the president's like careless tweeting is not actually a whistleblower complaint kind of issue.
But we don't know what else he's lying about. We don't know what else is happening behind the scenes. Like all I'm saying is there's enough for us to be freaked out about. That's all.
I am more freaked out by the failure of the procedure than I am by the existence of the whistleblower. The fact that the procedures are not being followed is concerning because that means that if and when a whistleblower of like epic proportions comes forward, there is again a precedent for it not being passed on.
Exactly. And it's an erosion of democracy that can and will most likely outlive Donald Trump and can and most likely will be abused by any president. Doesn't matter if they're Republican or Democrat. But hey, we get the wall. So that's all that matters. Oh, wait, we don't get the wall. My bad.
Oh, my God. Have you seen? I should like. So for the past like 2 or 3 weeks, I think it's the White House account, not necessarily Trump's account, but like the White House main Twitter account has been tweeting this. We're building the wall with like new images and like video of the wall being built. It is always the exact same segment. One segment being put up, tilted up, like, rested up.
From different angles.
It's the same wall. It's the same damn wall for 3 weeks now. They've been tweeting this video like it's new wall. And it's like very clearly the exact same wall. And it's not even upright. They're just like holding it up and propping it there.
The new wall is the old wall is the new wall. We're making the wall great again.
Like, I swear to God, Scavino rented a drone, went out there and like took all the footage it could. And now he's milking it for weeks. So he's got nothing else to go on.
And also the fact that now we're like straight up shamelessly, not we, but the Trump administration is taking billions of dollars from military families to pay for the wall that Mexico will not pay for. It's like such a self-own. But I digress.
Yeah. Man, did you hear his like insane story about the lack of ammo and how at one point Trump like asked Mattis for something. Mattis is like, we can't do that because we have no ammo left.
Then he's like, but it's OK. We, we'll use tweets. We'll fight them with tweets and curse words.
I just recalled that. And like he told the story like in public that Mattis is like, sir, we can't do this military thing because we no longer have any ammo. We're all out.
That's why we need to support the gun manufacturers.
Because we're all out of ammo.
Because we're all out of ammo. And the Mexicans and the Muslims will fight us with machine guns.
Shit, was he talking about nukes? Is that like the kind of ammo he thought he said we're saying we're out of?
And let's also not forget that this dude apparently, based on good reporting from Axios, allegedly discussed nuking hurricanes. Like we forget, right? Like even I forget. Like it's just like mnemonics. You say a certain word and like it triggers some like repressed memory of something traumatic that Trump has tweeted or said, and you realize, oh my god, he actually said that. And we just forget because there's like a new fresh wave of horror every day. Michelle, it's like a new fresh level of hell every day.
Yeah, the only ones that we still remember, the ones that are really funny. Like that's the only ones that like really stick around in our public consciousness.
But you know what? The one that I think is funny that people always forget, just because it just shows you how weird the dude is. Yeah, everyone talks about how he's lied or made misleading statements more than 12,000 times. But like the one lie that I can't wrap my head around is he lies about where his dad was born. His dad was born in New York.
And his mom.
And he just wants to tell everyone that his dad was born in Germany. And I'm trying to figure out like what's the rationale behind that lie.
I mean, his family used to lie that they're from Sweden because they didn't want to say they're from Germany. So yeah, there's like a family history of like lying about where they're from. But now that the secret's out, he has to like escalate it. I don't know.
I know. It's just so weird. Like, he's just so weird. You know how I know white privilege exists? Because a dude named Trump is elected president who gets to lie about where his dad was born. Episode 932.
Yeah.
Eating well and moving your body are really, really important ways to take care of yourself. But the truth is, even if we try to eat kale all day and drink green smoothies, we are probably still not getting all the essential nutrients that we need on a daily basis. That's where Ritual comes in. Ritual is the obsessively researched vitamin just for women. Ritual's essentials have nutrients that most of us can't really get enough from food by itself. And these nutrients come in all their clean, absorbable forms. There's no shady additives, there's no ingredients that can hurt you more than they can help you. All you have to do is take 2 easy-to-take capsules a day, and that provides 9 nutrients that you need to support a strong foundation for your health. I've been taking Ritual, at least for a year now, and it has made all the difference. My entire life, my mother has plied me with vitamins. I've bought vitamins, I have drawers full of them, and I just have been overwhelmed. It's really hard to take like 10 different things, but you don't have to do that with Ritual. It's just 2 capsules a day. It has made a tremendous difference. I feel better, I've got more energy, I even sleep better. And I love Ritual so much, I got it for my sister and I got it for my daughter. From D3 to omega-3, Ritual's Essential for Women helps fill all the gaps in your diet. And for those of you familiar with omega-3, you know you sometimes get a fishy aftertaste with that stuff, but not with Ritual, because there's a mint tab in every bottle that keeps things fresh. And if that's not enough, Ritual is a subscription. It comes right to your door. It's so easy to start and it's easy to pause. For example, if you, traveling or you don't need it for whatever reason, it's only $1 a day to have all the essential nutrients your body needs delivered to your door every month with no strings attached. So look, better health doesn't happen overnight. And right now, Ritual is offering our listeners 10% off during your first 3 months. Fill in the gaps in your diet with Essential for Women, a small step that helps support a healthy foundation for your body. Visit ritual.com/45th to start your ritual today. Once again, that's ritual.com/45th to start your ritual and get 10% off during your first 3 months at ritual.com/45th.
Close out this week, we'll do a brief update on an investigation that so far is still chugging along at a usual, an investigation pace. And that is the New York Attorney General. They are continuing their investigation into some of the Stormy issues, which have not gone away entirely. Now, we know at the start of the year, the Southern District of New York, the federal office, was investigating these and like had big plans to interview people. And then suddenly, they didn't. It just ended.
Nope.
It went away. You know, as soon as Barr got in there, it's just over. SDNY is no longer conducting this investigation. Only so far, Cohen is in prison for it, even though the allegations against him and the indictments showed conduct by others, including the president, that was also criminal. And the SDNY closed up shop. I'm sure Barr had nothing to do with it.
No, of course not.
But alas for Trump.
He's planning his holiday party at the Trump Hotel for $30,000.
And last for Trump, the New York State office has picked up the torch. And they are reportedly investigating, quote, whether the president's family business violated the law in handling its records about the payment to Stormy Daniels. And specifically, they're looking at whether or not the Trump Organization falsely described payments that were reimbursements to Michael Cohen. This crime under state New York state law of false business records is a misdemeanor, unless the false records are to cover up another crime, in which case it becomes a felony in its own right. Now, I think there's going to be some legal questions here about what sort of crime the statute can apply to, specifically whether a false records to cover up a federal crime can be a state crime under New York law. So I think there are some legal issues here to be worked out. But in terms of investigation, it's going ahead full steam. We know that last month, or earlier this month, the Manhattan District Attorney's Office sent subpoenas to the Trump Organization and to AMI. That's, you know, the tabloid magazine. Shit, what's the magazine? I'm blanking on it. The Inquirer? National Inquirer, that thing. I was going to say, like, World News Weekly, but that's, like, the bad boy one. So not that one. So this subpoena was seeking communications between the company and Stormy Daniels, and her attorneys, and Cameron Gould's attorneys. And then earlier this week, we learned that the Manhattan DA's office is talking to Cohen, and that they went to the prison to interview him, and that they have now entered into some kind of cooperation agreement.
Nice.
Yeah, that Cohen will cooperate with Manhattan DA's office in its investigation without incriminating himself. So, you know, that's all good and fine, although any case they want to bring can't depend on Cohen because he's useless.
Also forget, like, you know, you talk about obstruction of justice and Trump's potential lies, but we also forget campaign finance violations.
Yeah.
Like, Michael Cohen literally brought in the checks that Donald Trump signed as a sitting president to pay him off to hush up Stormy Daniels and Karen McDougal. That's a felony. You go to jail for that.
And the thing is, even Trump's base doesn't really believe him here. Some people do. Some, like, you can still find people and congressmen who can just, like, oh, it didn't happen. But overall, like, it's not actually an active dispute what happened in terms of him sleeping with Stormy and him paying her off and Karen McDougal. Like, Trump can call it fake news all he wants, but even his base knows that happened. Like, this factual reality is everyone knows it happened. The question is, like, what legal repercussions could follow. Now, I know a common line among the, you know, Trump base is that, oh, Trump should have to pay a fine just like Obama did for his campaign finance violations. Nah, this is not that kind of campaign finance violation.
This ain't your daddy's campaign finance violation. Yeah.
This is not your standard paperwork got filed late or at the wrong time. This is active fraud. And as part of the investigation today or this week, they requested 8 years of Trump's taxes. So we'll see if they get them.
And let's remind people that Trump says that he allegedly cannot release his taxes because they're under audit. Number one, they're not under audit. And number two,
well, actually, they are now. As president, it's mandatory audit.
But even if they were under audit, you can still release them. He just doesn't want to release them.
That's a good point. Every president ever since, like, past 50 years has had their tax returns under audit and yet have released them. So,
yeah, people forget that. Like, that's not an excuse. But he just makes up, again, another excuse to not be transparent and open and honest. Because, of course, he has nothing to hide. Why would Donald Trump have anything to hide? Not Donald Trump.
Well, if something remarkable happens at the closing of the Lewandowski hearing, I will record an update after. But I'm guessing this is the last for this week's episode. So catch you next week. Thanks, Waj.
Thanks, Susan.
All right, I'm back with a quick update to say I was wrong. Things did get more interesting in the Lewandowski hearing, because in the closing segment, the House deviated from its usual process of uselessly having representatives trade 5-minute rounds of questioning, which get nothing done. And instead, the Republicans and Democrats were to appoint a staff attorney to question Lewandowski for them for 30-minute rounds. So, if you haven't watched the hearing yet, but want to, go ahead and skip through all the members' questioning, because it's useless, and watch Barry Burke, the Democrats' appointed attorney, show how actual effective questioning works, and see how Lewandowski responds to it. And the way he responds is, spoiler alert, very poorly.
A big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan. And you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is at 45th Pod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.